You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon, I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend, and join us today. We are privileged and honored to have Ricardo Hernandez. Ricardo is the Deputy Consul General here in El Paso, and we're going to talk a little bit about his office, what he does, and also some of the feelings that perhaps Mexico has to share with us regarding some of the recent situations here on our border and South Texas as well. First of all, thank you so much for being with us here today, Ricardo.
Thank you, Louis. And on behalf of Consul General Marcos Bucio and all the personnel and all the staff of the Consul General of Mexico, we're privileged and honored to be here with you today.
Thank you very much. Ricardo, tell us a little bit about your background, first of all.
Well, I'm a diplomat since 1993, so this is my sixth post within the United States. We the diplomats in Mexico, have that. You have two routes, the Revlon route, which is Paris, London, and New York, or the McDonald's route. Then I think I'm in the very second, but by choose, because I choose that. It's because also I have a master's degree on U.S. law from from the University of New Mexico. So being graduated from the law school at Universidad Autónoma de Guadalajara, and being a lawyer and being a member of a foreign service, I entered to this program with UNM on for Mexican diplomats for a master's in U.S. law. That opens me wide options to provide much better information and advice to our Mexican nationals. My specialized on U.S. law was criminal process, criminal penal code, administrative law part, constitutional law, and immigration law also. So gives me as a scope, very interesting scope about the difference between the Mexico's law and the United States law, the processes and whatsoever. It's just matter of advice.
And so, of course, with the credentials that you just mentioned, it's a perfect fit here where you are, because why would they want to send you anywhere else?
This is where you're needed. That's exactly. It sells me very well for the United States. I'm a privilege. I'm very honored. I've been first in Phoenix, Arizona, then San Francisco, California, then Albuquerque, New Mexico, when they sent me to make this master's program. Then I have the privilege also to open our career consulate in St. Paul in Minnesota. And then being transferred to Nogales, Arizona. Then I back almost for 4 years, Mexico City. And then they kicked me out again because I said, no, you are making too much noise in Mexico. You have to be where you have to serve better your country. And definitely for me, it's a privilege and honor to serve my country where I've been needed.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe in addition to your office here in El Paso, Mexico has 53 or 54 other
Yes, we are the country with more consulates around the world, and specifically in the United States of America. We have 12 in Texas, 10 in California, 5 in Arizona, just to give you an idea.
And as far as, the closest one, I guess, would be Albuquerque?
And that's correct, and they depend on us because it is a career consulate. We are a consulate general. Actually, two career consulates depend on us, our consulate in Presidio and our consulate in Albuquerque.
You told us a little bit about your background and your education. Mm-hmm. Have you always been interested in these kind of issues since you were young, perhaps?
Well, yeah, it's because when I was a kid, my mom says, you always fight for your rights and for the rights of others. You really don't like injustice, and you have to study law. I grew up in an engineer family. My father was a mechanic and chemistry engineer. My older brother is an industrial engineering with a doctorate degree in Karlsruhe in Bundesrepublik Deutschland in Germany. And then my next brother is a civil engineer. So I've been the black sheep of family. And someone have to do the job. And that's exactly me. And I look after all the injustices and everything else. And that's why I presume I feel very comfortable to study law and then be a lawyer and then being a diplomat. And now being here behind this country under these specific
situations. I guess if anybody should know, our mothers should know, because if we can argue with them, then...
Oh, no, definitely. Actually, let me tell you, I have a very good relation with my mother, which is for medium class in Mexico, it's very common that you see your parents as as friends. But my mother and my older sister, she was the one that insists more than my mother. My mother says, do whatever you want to do. But my sister, no, you know what? You really like to fight. You are every time fighting for what is wrong and what is right. You have to study law. And, well, very persuasive. Two against one. That's it.
And some people might say, well, fighting or disagreeing is wrong. But if you disagree, that doesn't necessarily mean you want to fight. You just want to show the point of what is there. And in this instance here on the border, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But as I mentioned, disagreeing doesn't necessarily mean that you want to
fight. Let me tell you something, Louis. That's very interesting, and this experience for myself, and this is something that I very proudly share with you. We have monthly or very continuous meetings with Border Patrol, with CBP, with ICE, our counterparts in this country, okay? And I said to Consul General, you know what? Sometimes we underestimate ourselves and we overestimate them, these guys. The only thing that you can work together is just sitting, watching to the other's eyes, and first begin with your coincidences, your necessities, your interests. And much of the time, your interest and their interests are the very same one. And sometimes what you think at their very beginning is a difference, ending being a coincidence of both. So find the strength on your coincidence in order to solve the differences. Not confrontational, of course not. We are doing our job, they are doing their job. But many of the times, because we think that we are on different sides of the relation, we understand that probably we have confrontational. No, it's because of dialogue. It's because examining the situation is when you're going to find out, you are concerned on this. I also. It affects me. For example, national security, Louis. National security is a concern of President Trump administration, and not just President Trump. It's a concern from the government of the United States, as well as government of Mexico, okay? And national security involves drug smuggling, weapons smuggling, also people smuggling, which being a smuggler in Mexico and the United States is a crime. For example, Mexico being undocumented, it's an administrative fault. In the United States, unfortunately, because the law, it says that you're a criminal if you enter without inspection, are undocumented in this country, put you on the level of a criminal. However, the situation is being a smuggler in Mexico is also being a smuggler in the United States and means it's a criminal on both sides of a border. Thinking about that, it's when you find out that you cannot longer talk about national security. You have to talk about regional security because what affects Mexico affects the United States and vice versa. So if you fight a crime in Mexico, you are fighting a crime that probably could displace to the United States or otherwise. Fighting against a crime in Mexico is fighting against a crime in the United States. Fighting against the drug smugglers there and here are mutual interests. So that could feel or being perceived as a difference, but now it's a coincidence. And we have to work together in that. And this is an example of the good relation that nowadays we have with Border Patrol, with CBP, with ICE, because we strain our coincidences in order to fight back those evils that are taking the serenity or taking the safety of our countries. So we are both concerned in that regard. And definitely, it's a way to put how we work together with authorities. You mentioned before that the situation about this separation of families, you know, family members from that they came in undocumented into this country with their children and being separated. Louis, I'm very proud to say what I'm going to say. First of all, is a policy that applies. Just Mexico, United States, or United States, Mexico, and United States, Canada, the next country rule. Next country rule then means that you can process someone migratorily and immediately remove it. Remove it as the adequate name for deportation. Deportation is not more official language, the language of the immigration law. It's removal. Okay? So after you process someone and after being found guilty of undocumented entering into this country or state undocumented into this country, you proceed immediately to the removal. And the removal could just be crossing the line because it's a policy of next country, which is different with Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Brazil, that you have to gather all these people and then present to immigration judge and then put them on a plane and fly them back to their countries, okay? But why this is very important? Because besides the immigration job, the immigration law, we have an agreement, bilateral agreement. Secretaría de Relaciones Exteriores, that means Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Mexico, with Instituto Nacional de Migración, National Institute of Immigration, by one side, and the Consulate General of Mexico here on one side, and the other side, Customs and Border Protection, Border Patrol, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ERO, and HSI. Those agreements says that we have to promote and provoke safe and orderly repatriation into Mexico. That means when a person, a family members enters through undocumented into this country, adults and children. Accordingly, with a zero tolerance, these people must be segregated because adults cannot be put, well, adults must be placed on a detention center, adult detention center, where juveniles or children could not be placed. So that's the meaning of the separation. They have to be put in a foster parent cares or these special places, you know? But in the case of Mexico, immediately after the people, this family, this group enters into the United States, Border Patrol immediately informs us, you know what? I detain a family with three children, and I'm going to allow you to visit the children, perform the consular notification process. And consular notification process, Louis, it's based first and that on that interview you have to identify that the person is a Mexican national. Overall, first and overall, is a Mexican national. If the person is a Mexican national, you can continue. If he's not a Mexican national, sorry, I cannot continue with that. Okay, he's not a Mexican national, we cannot continue with the consular assistance. So first of all, and overall, is that we interview these children, finding out that in fact they are Mexicans, and immediately the Border Patrol put on our custody to be interviewed and immediately being repatriated to Mexico, either for immediate reunification with family members in Ciudad Juárez or otherwise put under the custody of DIF. Desarrollo Integral de la Familia, which is a counterpart of Child Protective Services, just to have an idea. So because they are authorities that have the power by law to be the custodians of these children, we cross them the border, put under DIF supervision and custody, and then DIF will take care about them until family members are contacted in Mexico's place of origin to reunify. So that's exactly what happened. And that means non-Mexican is in those children camps, with exceptions, which is necessary to clarify. The exception is, let's say that the father says, yes, but we are going to reunify with my brother or with my mother, which are LPR, legal permanent residents, or they are citizens of this country, or they stay here in this country illegally. And I don't want the kid must be back into Mexico. I want to take the kid with their family members. The immigration law call them sponsors. Then is when these children, but very few of them, no hundreds or tens or whatsoever, four or five of them are placed in these camps. Meanwhile, our Office of Refugee Resettlement finds out where their family members are located in the United States, find out that they are able to receive them. They are making a socioeconomical studies to finding out that they can receive them, they can then support them whatsoever. And after those studies, ORR makes a recommendation to the immigration judge, and the immigration judge says, okay, reunify these children with their family members, let's say in Louisiana or New York or Chicago or Washington or whatever, but just in those very specific cases. In the other cases where there is no reunification, possible reunification in the United States, the juveniles or children are immediately turned over to the Consulate of Mexico, perform the consular interview, and then send back into Mexico. That's why we do not have those tens or hundreds of children separated from Mexican families. And if they are, it's because father or mother says, yes, but I want him to be to remain with his grandmother or with my brother in Illinois, for example.
We are visiting with Ricardo Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez is the Consul General of Mexico here in the El Paso office. Now, what you were just telling us, because we read in the media, we hear, we watch the fact that there are a lot of children being separated from their families, and a lot of people sometimes automatically think, well, they're on the border, so they have to be Mexican or they have to be of Mexican descent. And as you just said, none of them are.
No. And as I said, Louis, it's thanks to the cooperation that we have on Border Patrol. They immediately inform us. We immediately perform the consular notification interview. And then, accordingly with the parents' decision, we go on. If we immediately repatriate them or we keep them on where they are, just looking after, they are well-treated, they are well-fed, they're healthy and everything, and just keep a close follow-up about where these children are going to be turned over in order to be reunified within the United States. But that's our participation. The zero tolerance, Louis, it's something that people do not understand. Zero tolerance, what means? There are three ways to being removed from the United States of America. First, which is considered the voluntary departure, which means that there's a way that immigration officer or Border Patrol officer asks you, okay, you have to return to Mexico. Do you want to do it voluntarily? Yes, sign here, and we take you to the line and you cross the border back to Mexico. Voluntary departure. Second, reinstatement of removal. That means a person that was previously deported to Mexico, then in order to avoid reprocessing him or her for a new order of removal, they took the previous order and reinstated. So they said, we're going to reinstate the previous order of removal to make it faster. And the other, which is expedite removal. Expedite removal, it's some of the faculties that immigration officers have under certain circumstances. That means that they can decide to remove you, no voluntary departure, to remove you without being presented to an immigration judge. Zero tolerance means no more of that. No more expedited removal, no more voluntary departure, no more of restatement of removal. That means every single person that is detained must be presented to an immigration judge to make a determination. And practically, the judge is, because you have the right, constitutional right, to be presented to the judge, to explain whatever situation rises, probably you're claiming asylum or your political asylum or refugee situation. And then the judge is going to evaluate the information, investigations or whatsoever, and establish that if you qualified or not for asylum or for refugee situation. And if not, you have to be removed from this country. But all these people must be presented before an immigration judge. That means zero tolerance. And that means that you have to wait some time in an adult detention center. Meanwhile, you're here with an immigration judge. That's very important because people talks about the zero tolerance, but what means? That means zero tolerance. And that's why juveniles or children and adults must be separated, because, as I mentioned before, they have to be placed in an adult detention center where by law cannot place also the children. Now, with this order from a judge, they say, no, they cannot be separated. Now, it's a little bit more difficult because the government of the United States have to find out the way where to place and cheer families, given the parents the opportunity to be presented to an immigration judge. Meanwhile, you wait for your hearing with your family in order avoiding this separation.
Because we've been hearing about this in the media, it's almost impossible to pick up a newspaper, turn on a television or a radio and not hear about this. And with you all having an office here in El Paso, I would imagine that a lot of people who may not understand what zero tolerance is or may just hear the headlines and not follow up are probably going and knocking on your door and saying, help us.
Well, actually, we have this program, Programa de Asesorías Legales para Mexicanos, PALE, which we already have. If you, by any chance, you are not right now in a process of removal or even in a process of removal, if you have enough grounds to establish that you can remain legally into this country, we can refer to one of our legal advisors. By law, and accordingly with the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, the consular representative cannot represent you legally in this country. You have to go to a legal representation through the proper attorney. So what we do is we have referral attorneys that takes that part. This is very important, Louis. Our attorneys, immigration attorneys, are certified by Homeland Security. And that means a lot. Because we are helping people. For example, the last year, I guess 2017, there were about like 5,000 and such naturalized people. For these 5,000 and such, we help 1,334 on processes of naturalization. So we welcome all these 1,300 and more to the consulate. We have workshops to explain them how to fill up the migratory forms, and later on special meetings with our immigration attorneys that for free give the advice how to present the documents, and in some cases we pay the fees, immigration fees, to allow them to make citizens of this country. So what we try to do is help our people that have some means to remain documented in this country and do not have the idea or ignore about all that. So they come to us, they've been informed about what is your real expectation, because everybody says, well, I'm undocumented, I have the right to be to remain in this country illegally. Wait a second. Must wait for the advice of a real professional that is going to say if you have any possibility or not. And that's exactly that we are, and all the consulates of Mexico and the United States are doing very responsible manner. Give you real expectations. No telling you what you want to listen. No telling you what you need to know.
As far as being a representative of your government in Mexico and having offices all over the world and in the country as well, and it's no secret that there have been a lot of, disagreements about this administration, the Trump administration, and some of the things that have been going on. Now, Mexico also has elected a new president, so there's going to be a new administration there soon. Tell us a little bit about the role that you all have to play as far as being on the border and trying to explain about both sides.
Something that is very natural. For example, Consul Bucio is very active to gather entrepreneurs from south of the border and in here in El Paso, and being participating in workshops and conferences, economical conferences, about the convenience of being partners. Because unfortunately, Louis, my personal perception is that many people in Washington ignores what happened here at the border, how interdependent both communities are one from each other. So Consul General, what he's doing is participating in these kind of workshops to involve more people from around. How important is the relation in between El Paso and, for example, Ciudad Juarez, no? We have a huge number of maquiladoras that, and I'm going to take these words from DeMargo, the mayor of El Paso. He said, you know, Ricardo, people must know that for every job that we have in El Paso, there is a backup of 5 jobs in Mexico. That means for each job that we have in El Paso, we depend on 5 jobs you have in Ciudad Juarez. That's the level of interdependence. Because industria maquiladora, inbound industry, and because this is a very big interdependence, Louis. The trade, how many people crosses every single day legally? And this is something that must be presented, and this is something that must be explained, and this is something that people must know. When you talk about immigration, you ever refer to bad things. illegal undocumented people crossing undocumented the border, but nobody refers out how many hundreds of thousands of people cross daily legally the border of Mexico, the United States, because they work here, because they study here, because they are promoting the economy of the region. You cannot think about El Paso without Ciudad Juárez. You cannot perceive Ciudad Juárez without El Paso. Many people even drive all the way along from Chihuahua, even for Durango, for neighbor states, to make their purchases and everything here in El Paso. Okay, so you go to any mall, any shop whatsoever, and you can ask them how many of your customers are Mexicanos. They're going to tell a very important number. So that's exactly the way the Consulate of Mexico, very responsibly, is doing. Participating, organizing workshops, informational workshops about the inter-economic dependence that we have between Mexico and the United States. And not only that, it's just promoting and preserving the culture. Okay? We're promoting a lot of cultural events. For example, we have prepared for this concert from Romeno, which is a Raramuni pianist. It's unbelievable. You listen to this guy playing Chopin, Schubert on the piano. Just close your eyes and you think probably this guy is a Vienna student or something like that. No, it's a native Raramuni, Tarahumara, and later on playing his own music on the piano. It's outstanding because you have to give this region their identity, and their identity is a binational, bicultural identity. You cannot say that you are just otherwise you have to talk about that there is an Mexican-American, highly impacted culture. You cannot disassociate that. Okay, it's the border with more Spanish-speaking people is in the whole border, Mexico, the United States.
As Dr. Natalicio has mentioned, as you mentioned, the mayor has mentioned, and a lot of people talk about the relationship that you just mentioned, Juarez and El Paso, and how close they work together and how they need each other. Perhaps we have not touched base on everything that people wanted to hear, but right. If they were to go on the web to find out more about your office, where do they need to go?
Oh, you can go to Facebook, Consulado General de Mexico en El Paso, and you're going to find us. And you're going to find the list of all the events that we have prepared, all the fairs, all the workshops that we have prepared for immigration, to promote information about immigration, financial education, health education, and also provide them with free health services that are available. And they can go in order to preserve and keep a healthy society.
Where are your offices located?
910 East San Antonio Avenue here in downtown El Paso.
We've been visiting with Ricardo Hernandez. Ricardo is the Deputy Consul General here in El Paso for the Consulate General of Mexico. They're located at 910 East San Antonio, and the phone number is 915-747-3231. You can also go on the web, and you can go to their Facebook page, or you can just go to the regular web page and find out a lot of the information that Ricardo has been talking about, plus many more other things. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Thank you, Louis. And besides that, besides your invitation, the honor to be here, I have to insist, and I'm going to tell you, I'm your loyal listener since I arrived here in El Paso, being a loyal listener for KTEP. Thank you very much. Very honored.
And thank you so much. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sainz.